Alright, it's me, and I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. I hope you guys are all right. We've got a very cool episode for you today. First off, we'll catch up on a few of the sort of news bits going on. Noel having been out and about on the promotion trail a bit with the Nebworth film coming up very shortly. And also Liam Gallagher having continued doing live shows. So that's all been very good. And also today we've got a really cool interview. It is a couple of people coming back, returning heroes. We've got Ian Armstrong from the Oasis Tribute Band Columbia, now of the Oasis Tribute Band Oasis Supernova. And we have James Hargreaves from YouTube, from the James Hargreaves Guitar Channel. And what we're going to be doing, last episode I did my piece on Oasis intros, and I got the guys on to talk about our favourite Oasis intros. And we go through our top five, and it's a really fun discussion, just what you love to hear, really, just nerdy people geeking out over how much we love Oasis music. So I really hope you guys enjoy that. On the podcast front, it's not too long now until the 2nd of October, when I'll be doing an evening with Alan McGee. I'll be hosting that at the Savoy Theatre in Monmouth. So if you are in the area and you can make it, and you haven't got your tickets, then crack on. The link is in the description below. And as well as that, we do talk about it in the interview with Ian and James, but there is a live event coming up for the Oasis Podcast. It's on the 11th of December. It's at FAC 251 in Manchester, which is the old Factory Records building. For existing patrons, you can come on down for free. And also for podcast listeners, if you want to come on down, then the link for tickets is in the description below. And also, if you would like to have £3 off, the discount code is Supernova. So hit the link, type in Supernova in the promo code to reduce it for £3. But that is going to be a great event. I talk about it in the interview with Ian and James. And so, yeah, should be really exciting. More stuff to be announced very soon. And also, while we're talking about the patron, I've just come into some very cool Oasis items, so I'm going to be popping out free gifts to a bunch of the longest serving patrons and patrons at the $3 or $5 and above range. So that is going to be coming out very shortly. All right, so news-wise, Noel Gallagher has been doing some interviews and things for promoting Nebworth. He did the Sofa Sessions with Joe Wiley, and that was very interesting. He did three songs with her. He did a decent acoustic version of Flying on the Ground, which was fine. It was good. It was lovely. It sort of was, you know, similar to what you've heard before. But, you know, he's singing it really well. He's playing it very well. So that was great. He also did a cover of a Bob Dylan tune called You Ain't Going Nowhere. It wasn't a Dylan tune I was particularly aware of, to be honest. But I liked Noel's version of it. And then going back and listening to Dylan's version, I do actually prefer Noel's version of it. I think it's just a bit more of that sort of modern Noel style. So, yes, I really like that. So let's have a little bit of this.
2, 3, 4.
And Noel must be on a bit of a Bob Dylan tip at the moment, because I don't think I covered this on the podcast, but he did that version of the Mighty Quinn a little while back when he did that that sort of TV show. So yeah, so let's have a little bit of that. Some are putting up monuments, some are jotting down notes. Everybody's living in despair, every girl and boy. But when Queen the Eskimo gets here, everybody gonna jump for joy. But the song that he did that caused the biggest stir in this session was the cover he did of Live Forever. Now, this was a very interesting one. I mean, firstly, the cover version itself is a very different version. It's a real departure. It sort of took me by surprise when I heard it because it is so different. It is a very different version from the traditional Oasis version and also the versions that we've heard Noel sing over the years. There's sort of a very different guitar solo. The overall sound is different. It's like he's changed the chord sequence around. And it does really jump out. I mean, to me, it sounds like he sort of modern Noel-ified it in the same way that like that he did Champagne Supernova when he's done that live and various other tracks. And I know some people don't really like that because they'd rather he would just keep it, you know, as the original version, but I was really taken aback by it. I really liked it. I did see some criticism sort of saying, oh, he's made it kind of like a an Ellie Goulding Christmas song sort of style, which I can understand. I can see that, but I just think just in the way it really accentuates the beauty of the song, I thought it really worked. And especially some of those parts of the melody where it's like maybe I will never be all the things that I want to be. I mean, that part in Live Forever is probably my favorite bit in the song. And Noel doing that with his voice as it is now and with all of the backing that he's got in this tune, I thought it worked really, really well. So let's have a bit of that. Maybe I'll never be all the things that I want to be. Now is not the time to cry. One of the things I thought was very interesting about that, though, is that he said that he'd never played it before. The quote was, "Since the day I wrote this song and since the day I sang it to the band in 1993 in the rehearsal room, I've never sang Live Forever once. Never in a sound check, never. Even when Liam didn't bother to turn up for gigs, we never did it." Right, so obviously I then did the research and just double checked because I'm aware he sang it a bunch of times, and this isn't an exhaustive list, but he sang it on a radio session on the Don't Believe the Truth tour at the WA Everett Event Centre, September 2005. He sang it live on the Late Late Show in Ireland. He sang it at the MTV Unplugged show in 1996. He sang it in 2005 for a San Diego radio station. He did a mini tour supporting Paul Weller, and he played it every night, including at the Wolverhampton Civic Hall in 1998. So, come on, Noel. Like, what are you doing? You've played and sang it loads of times. And I know there's other radio sessions he did in, like, 1994, because I just know I can just hear his voice doing it. So, yeah, whether or not he's selective memory or whether he was more just thinking about proper big live shows, you know, I get that then. That makes sense because he hadn't really done it with the full band. So that's probably what he was thinking. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt on that front. All right, on the Liam live front. So I think last time I spoke to you, he had done the NHS gig and he'd done the Reading gig. Well, last weekend he did Transmit, which was probably the best of the recent shows he's done. Scottish fans are always the best, and they were really going for it. The band seemed to be on really good form, probably even better than at Reading. So yeah, I think that was the highlight of the recent Liam shows. And one of the bits that I thought was really cool was the way that he ended Why Me, Why Not with going into Come Together. So that was really cool. So let's have a bit of that. As I'm recording this, he's also played Isle of Wight Festival this evening. I haven't been able to watch it, but I will be checking it out later. From what I'm seeing online, though, it sounds like the crowd's been a bit quiet and things again, as more similar to like how it was at Reading and things, as compared to, you know, Transmit, where that seemed to be the best one. Plus, also, he's not really changed the set list on these shows, so it would be nice for him to sort of mix it up a little bit. Maybe when he comes back to do the next round of gigs, I will have mixed up a bit from there. All right, something that we do on here occasionally, which we haven't done much of recently, is feature new bands. I'm always happy to feature new bands if they're good, or if they have similarities to Oasis, or if the person that emails me says nice things about the podcast. In those cases, then we're happy to feature them. And especially what I really like to do is hear from you. So in this instance, I was contacted by Howard from Bob Owler, and he's dropped me this nice message. And they've got a new tune out, as he will tell you about, called Million Dollar Man. I was hoping it was going to be a cover of this.
Everybody's gonna pay. 'Cause the million dollar man always gets his way.
Which it isn't, unfortunately, but anyway, I'll let Howard tell you about it.
Hey James, this is Howard from the band Bob Owler. Just wanted to let fellow Oasis fans know of our most recent single, Million Dollar Man. It's a proper stomper of a tune that we're all immensely proud of, and obviously taking a few nods from the boys as well. We managed to get our debut record, called Everything's Wrong But It's Alright, out earlier on in the year during all this craziness. And you can listen to it on all the usual platforms, and it's also out on a limited vinyl run. Finally, we get to have our album launch gig at Jimmy's in Liverpool on the 30th of September. And feel free to check out our YouTube page too. Always looking to bump up those subscribers' numbers. Anyways, take care. Hope you like it. Cheers.
I saw your face today. It didn't look the same as when I saw it all those years ago. Well, I heard you laugh today. Well, it had changed, maybe the laughless ones stole it from your throne. But tonight them clowns are laughing on the other side of the faces like I see them. But nobody near the desk or near them. And I say to you, why she's standing there frowning in you? No, don't you worry about me, 'cause I'm the million dollar man. I'll live up in my tree and follow my sweet master plan. Now don't you worry about me, I'll sing along to all the bands. Yeah, you can join me if you just reach out, grab my hand, grab my hand, grab my hand, grab my hand.
Good work. Thank you very much for getting in touch. As I said, do make sure you check out Bob Owler everywhere mentioned, and it will be linked in the description of the episode. And if you also have a band and you'd like to be featured, then drop me an email and yeah, happy to do it. All right, that'll do it. Let's get on to this interview with Ian and James. Welcome back to the Oasis podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. And today I'm very excited to be joined by two of the finest people you could want to analyse Oasis music. One of whom plays in successful Oasis tribute bands and is, you know, and is the Noel, the tall Noel, as I call him, because he's too tall to be Noel. You should team up with Liam from Oasis. He's really tall as well. You could just be tall Oasis. That would work well, Ian.
I would love to team up with Aaron, but he doesn't want anything to do with me.
Fair enough. And then we've also got the YouTube legend, newly minted chart star, and who's now recorded in a bunch in pretty much the only recording studios left in the UK that Oasis recorded in. James, how you doing, man?
Very well. You guys okay?
Yeah, good. You've had a mad couple of weeks. So if those of you that don't follow James Hargreaves on YouTube, number one, you should, and get on it. But yeah, you know, I was talking to Nick Bryan today. And yeah, because obviously he still does a lot of work with Rockfield. And I know you were at Rockfield, weren't you? But not with Nick necessarily. But yeah, and yeah, we were saying, I think it's pretty much Rockfield and you know, and what was Pink Museum in Liverpool. I don't think there's that one, Abbey Road, obviously, but there's not that many places left that Oasis actually recorded. So I think you've been at most of them, if not all of them.
But Olympic's gone, isn't it? Olympic is a cinema now. there was Eden. Eden's gone. And what was the name of the place they did Some Might Say At? It was Loco. Loco's gone.
But yeah, anyway, for those of you that haven't seen it, how was Rockfield and how was Pink Museum?
Rockfield was it was spiritual, man. It really was. It's hard to put it into words. Like, so when I was driving down, have you ever had that thing where excitement is almost as draining as anxiety? Because you're just like, all the way down. And I just couldn't believe it, you know. Somewhere in the universe, 17-year-old me was realizing it had all been worth it, you know. It was so amazing. So we were in the Quadrangle studio. There's two studios. There's the Coach House and there's the Quadrangle. The Quadrangle where we were recording, I was producing on a record, so it wasn't my stuff. But that's the place where the Stone Roses did some recording, and that's also where Queen recorded everything that they ever did at Rockfield, including everything off Sheer Heart Attack, Killer Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody, Night of the Opera, all that business was there as well. So it was... I came away feeling like I had, for the first time, just dipped my toes in a world I'd only ever dreamed about. It was emotional, man. I'm not a particularly emotional person, but it was moving.
They still got a lot of the old analog equipment in there.
Yeah, everything. They had the exact piano that Freddie did Killer Queen on. They had we looked in the Coach House briefly, but they've got the piano that the Imagine intro for Don't Look Back in Anger was played on, and I got to play that on there. They've got shitloads of vintage stuff. They don't seem to chuck anything away unless it's broken. I mean, they even had, in the Quadrangle, you got studio, band accommodation, and maintenance. And in the maintenance thing, they had one of the old original mixing desks gutted, but apparently it was one that Queen used. You know, they've got everything.
That is nuts, isn't it? Yeah, that is crazy. Well, one of the really cool things today, I mean, what we're going to be talking about today is Oasis intros, following on from the episode I did last time. I thought, well, who better to get on than you know, as I said, guys that, you know, that analyze Oasis for
for a living, basically, for, you know, for bands, and also for you know, doing bits and pieces on YouTube and stuff. So so I'm really looking forward to getting into that. But also, it's really nice to catch up with you two, because we have a big announcement to make, which is that on the 11th of December at FAC 251 in Manchester, we're going to be doing a big Oasis podcast show and meetup, including Ian's new Oasis tribute band, which is called Ian?
Oasis Supernova.
Which is Oasis Supernova. And also, is it going to be the debut of the new James Hargreaves musical experience?
It's going to be the official debut. I got a little bit of news exclusive for this on that. Last night, it's taken me a while to get it together because there was lots of people who applied. Last night we had our first practice, and fucking hell, this is going to sound good. I swear to God, honestly, the lad I've got on guitar, do you know the song Kremlin off the first EP?
Yeah.
It's very hard. He picked up all the guitar parts within 20 minutes. And so it's going to be absolutely shit hot. It's going to be our first official gig, but we are going to do a couple of sort of sneaky rehearsal, warm-up secret gigs around pubs in the area just to get broken in. But that's going to be, technically, that's going to be the launch of me and the band, yeah.
Excellent. And Ian, is this going to be, because no, this is a new band, isn't it? You were Columbia.
Yeah.
And then when you were up in Scotland, but now you're in the Northwest, this is like the new venture, and it's like a whole nother level, right?
Yeah, so I was in Columbia, who have changed their name post-lockdown to Oasis, when I was in Edinburgh, and so I've moved to Rippendon, which is kind of between Leeds and Manchester, and I put my notice in at work literally the week before lockdown one. And then got furloughed for 3 months while I was on gardening leave. And I had this idea anyway, that which I had not told my wife, because she would have been a little bit pissed off if I told her, we're moving and I'm also going to go and start a new band. But I had this idea in my head that I was wanting to develop with Columbia, that was, how can we create visuals and then sync Liam or Noel singing and the band playing actually to what's happening on the stage? So I spent basically my gardening leave lockdown trying to fathom how we do that, and through trial and error we kind of got there. We started rehearsing last August. The band is all, apart from myself, the band is at one point or another, they've all been professional musicians, so it's a bit of a I tried to get the best people in. We've got live keys player who also plays synths but also plays samples. And so we've, like, as an example, we played You Know What I Mean, and we play the plane at the beginning. We tried to add more theatre to it. And we've been working on it all the way through lockdown. And we did our first gig at an event that I was organising, which was due to be in October of 2020, but got put back and then got put back again. And I'd sold loads of tickets. And I didn't want people to start asking for refunds, so I like basically added another band and then added another band. And we ended up with a tribute band lineup of Beastie Boys, Oasis, The Roses, Happy Mondays, and New Order, the tribute band. that was our first gig last weekend, and then we're playing in Southampton. We just have to go down to do a lookalike festival gig in Southampton. There's a few other bits and pieces on the cards, but I think essentially 11th of December is going to be the day that we do the full gig with the visuals, because that's taken the most rehearsal. So the band's really tight. We've got the whole show down, but it's quite a system playing along with the video, because it's not straightforward and it's taken a lot of work to get it there. So I'm not going to divulge how we've done it, but hopefully it works when it comes to do the gig in Factory.
Excellent.
But it will hopefully be like, here's Liam, and Liam will start singing Wonderwall at the same point that Chris, our singer, starts singing Wonderwall, and everybody will be able to, because I didn't want it to be like, I hate the tribute bands that wear the bucket hats and get out the Union Jack guitars and wear the Macs and the Parkers, and it just looks like End of the Pier stuff, and it's crap, and the music's always shit, it's never good. So the whole thing with this was, we aren't going to focus on trying to look the part and act the part and sticking our fingers up everybody. We're going to make sure that the music is right, and we're going to try and bring the visual element to it in a different way. So there's a few videos of us in rehearsals kicking around on YouTube. The Champagne Supernova, which looks great. We've got a full set. We've got about 14 tunes at the minute, and we're going to add another 5 or 6 to come up to about an hour and a half, an hour and 40. So
it's looking good. Well, I'm gutted about the samples, because I was going to come on stage with you and do like the, you know, the and a wackle, 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 and stuff like that. I had it down pat, mate.
Do like was it Tor Andre Flo that used to do the plane?
Yeah, exactly. But oh well, that's fine. You do your samples on the keyboard, then no worries. All right. Well, look, I'm really excited about that. What we're also going to do as well is, you know, I'm not sure at the moment about maybe special guests, whether it's interviews on the stage with big names that have been on the podcast before. We're going to play that by ear. Maybe some more announcements to come. So we will watch this space for that. But ultimately, what is going to be really exciting is having, you know, all of the I've never been to the Northwest for a show. We've done Scotland, we've done down south, and we've done London, but we've not done Northwest. And ultimately, you know, that's where we need to be. This is the Oasis podcast. That's the home. So yeah, really excited for that. Amazing Oasis tribute. I can't wait to see the official debut of the James Hargreaves Experience. Our you know, who's now had this chart experience as well. You're a big star now. It's amazing, James. But very exciting.
Not quite there yet, but onwards and upwards.
But you did just hit 10,000 subscribers on YouTube.
I did, yes. Day before yesterday, I think, which is nice.
Yeah, that's amazing. That must be very exciting.
Well, it's well timed, because the second EP, as of literally half an hour before we got on here, is fully mixed and ready now.
Excellent.
I'm glad that the subscribers are still climbing, because I'm hoping that when I haven't got a proper release date for it yet or anything, but it's finished now and it sounds pretty cool. And so I'm hoping that as the subscriber base grows, that means that I'll be able to get top 5 this time if possible. We got 7 last time in the physical singles. I want to get 2 places higher if I can, and get British rock and roll back where it belongs.
Absolutely, mate. That's fantastic. Cool. All right. Well, look, should we talk about some intros, some Oasis intros? Now, first off, before we get into our favourites and our picks, is it something that you guys noticed before? I suppose I never really noticed until I joined the band. And I mean, I was a singer, so I wasn't really in the band, you know what I mean? But you know, I was given sheets with, you know, intro, C, G, D, or whatever, times 4, and then verse, D, A, you know, and so you go, okay. So, and then when you listen to Oasis, and also trying to learn music, trying to learn guitar, playing Oasis songs, you're like, okay, I now can understand there's an intro section, and then there's a verse section, and then there might be a middle 8, or there might be a chorus, and you play that 4 times, you play that 4 times. This might be sounding like completely obvious stuff to you guys, but to me that was such a big deal to then understand, oh, so that's how songs work, that's how you structure them. And then when it comes to Oasis songs as well, it's like, okay, so which songs have a separate intro bit and which songs just go straight into the verse. And for me, it was clear when you're building it up and you're looking at it, it's like so many of these follow this exact same pattern, a bit of a riff or guitar feedbacky kind of noise. And then the drums, bam, and then we go into the verse chord sequence once or twice, and then the vocal hits. You know, is that, when you guys are listening to it, is that sort of, are you sort of getting your head around that as well? That is, tends to be how they build their tracks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose one of the big things that always set Oasis apart from other bands at the time was they put thought into the beginning, middle and end of a song. So a lot of indie bands, they'd write the song and that was job done. And, you know, they'd just be chord and in. I mean, it's a fantastic song, but a good example of that is Slight Return by the Blue Tones. Just chord and you're straight in. Fantastic tune, no knock to the Blue Tones at all. But there was literally no intro, just straight in. Oasis didn't do that almost ever. I think there was one or two songs where they just kind of went kaboom and in. But most of the time, the intros, the outros, they were thought through, they were choreographed, they were planned, and they were road tested. So especially the Definitely Maybe era stuff, they tested this stuff live. I think it might have been you who told me that the outro for... I'm the Walrus. I know we're talking intros, but the outro, I think it was you who told me, James, that happened because they needed to pad out a set and they didn't have enough time. And all these funny little happy accidents that kind of conspired on the road where they road tested these different bits and bobs to create that beginning, middle and end that so many other bands didn't have.
What about you? Actually physically learning to play these things, is it starts to, you sort of start to see patterns and how they build the tunes?
I think it's what's interesting as well is when we're talking, especially about early Oasis, they probably didn't have they probably weren't confident enough in their skill to just go straight into a song. They maybe wanted an intro. Everyone almost, they use it as a way to settle into a tune before Liam came in a little bit. But I think that what they, like Noel is obviously, is clearly very clever, and what they did do was instantly when you hear an Oasis intro, it catches your ear, like the beginning of Slide Away, like that little hammer on you, like straight away you know it's like it's two notes. Or Rock and Roll Star, the little bend, that little sequence before the drums come in, you just Morning Glory is another example, you know, you just it catches you out and it catches you straight away, and it's intriguing. Obviously the best example of that is probably Wonderwall, because it's almost like a little bit peculiar. Your ear catches it and is a little bit like, what's that? They've got he had a real knack for capturing that. I think he's come away from it later in his career. He doesn't, I don't feel like he has no rights fully formed intros anymore in the same way.
Maybe yeah, that's, I mean, that was one of the things one of the kind of the points that I sort of finished off with, having analysed them all. All the album tracks, I didn't go into every single one, but you know, there wasn't that many in the later years that would have a separate section that was the intro. A lot of them, and I think it's once you get into the point of Andy and Gem being in the band, ironically, you'd imagine that, well, we've now got these great players, you know, the whole group is all exceptional players, that maybe they should have then been, you know, building these separate sections and things. But actually, I think it was that. In those early days, it's often the other guys in the band is just doing nothing, and then Noel's doing an extra thing, and then everyone kicks in. And maybe it's that they weren't really, it's not like they're going to do some sort of, you know, I'm thinking like Ocean Colour Scene or something, you know, like the Riverboat song where it goes into this really intricate riff and there's a cool bass riff and there's an off-kilter drum beat or whatever. Well, early Oasis wasn't good enough to do that, or that's, maybe they were, but they didn't, they chose not to. So it is just literally Noel fiddles around and does something. I always think of like the Up in the Sky riff, and then we have these big open chords set the scene, and then drum fill, bang, we're in. And I think maybe it's their limitations that kind of that meant that's how they kind of they chose to build the songs in that way.
Yeah, there's probably an element as well of the amount of live music that was being played. No, they all used to write very separately. I know that in the early days, Noel always did, but they also hammered all of that out in rehearsal rooms and, as James was saying, worked on it, honed it, developed it, put a bit in, that shit, do another bit. And they just, it was just built and built and built and built and built. And I guess when you become such a big machine where your time's so precious that you're not in the rehearsal rooms 7 nights a week, you lose that a little bit and you focus more on actually, I'm going to write the song, I'm going to write the melody, I'm going to write the lyrics.
Mm. I was saying that a lot of them later days, you can tell it, especially like Standing on the Shoulder of Giants, like, because we know we've heard all those leaked demos and we know how complete those demos were. And so it's not like you've got a bunch of people sitting in the room figuring it out. Like I said in the other episode, there's only Noel and Alan White actually play it from the band. Obviously, you've got Strange Boys in there a lot, but you know, so they're not going to, it's not going to be a rhythm guitar player or someone saying, oh, why don't I do this for a bit? Because literally all they were doing was translating the demos into the studio recordings. And I think you can hear that definitely carries on into the later years. James, did you want to, shall we then jump into our favorite intros? Now, I think I said three, but then I figured out five, and I think Ian said he's done seven. So how many have you got, James? Is there anything in particular that you want to work on?
I've whittled it down to five.
You've got five. Okay. Ian, are you happy with five?
I've got five.
All right. Yeah. Well, James, do you want to start us off then? What's your, have you ordered these, or is this no particular order?
Yeah, these are in order of increasing greatness.
Okay, go on then. What's your number five?
Morning Glory.
Oh,
I love just the... I mean, especially when you see the videos of the gigs as well, when that helicopter noise just comes in. Ba, 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 ba. And then you've got those offbeat hits from Alan White. And then the... I think that whole intro is the hardest hitting thing on Morning Glory. I think it's outstanding. So number five for me, Morning Glory.
Absolutely. I was going to put that in, but I talked about it a little bit on the last episode, so I ditched it. But Ian, is any thoughts on that, or is that in your five?
I'm going to come on to that.
Okay. All right. Ian, well, then what's your number five then?
My number five is, do you know what I mean? Because it's just, I don't think that they ever did anything like it again, really. There's obviously there's the play and everything and all of the madness that goes on, but actually, putting that aside, just the way that Alan's drums come in is just mad in itself, and it's just so epic. I love it. I just love all of the sounds, all of the noise that goes on. I think it's an absolute wall of sound and something that, the kind of, you know, like I think about Falling Down or maybe like Who Feels Love, they've got that those synthy kind of feedbacky, tweaky sounds, but nothing ever sounded quite, they captured a rawness in that as well that was digitized. But yeah, so I'm gonna say, do you know what I mean? For its epicness.
Fantastic, yeah. And it's got backwards vocals, hasn't it, James?
Why rinky from her? Yes, it does. Which is just all my people right here, right now. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Backwards, and then I read somewhere actually that it wasn't Owen Morris who did the chopping up. It was someone else. Was it Geezer on the Sound? Geezer on the Mark Coyle? Was it Mark Coyle who did that?
Coyle, really?
I have it in my head. I read it on Oasis recording info, I think. Right, I'm going to look it up now.
Well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to text Nick Bryan and see what he says, because he was actually there. All right, cool. Anyway, so my number five is Head Shrinker. And the reason for that is it's just so loud, and I just love it so much. I mean, it sounds like the Faces. It just the way it kicks in with that guitar, and then, like, you think... that's the guitar couldn't get any louder, and then there's like another layer of loud guitar, and then another layer, and then the drums pounding. And what I really like about it is that it's in this sort of magic point where it's not the Definitely Maybe sessions, and it's not, and they've still got Tony. So you've got the sort of the Morning Glory kind of recording sound, but you've still got Tony on drums. And the only three songs, as far as I'm aware, that have that is Some Might Say, Acquiesce, and Head Shrinker, and which is three absolutely incredible songs, obviously. And and Head Shrinker, I just think it's such a powerful intro. It's often the one when, you know, if ever, what was it, that Simon Price, the author, was like, oh, Oasis just don't rock at all, you know, and I was like, have you even listened to this song, mate? Check it out. So, Head Shrinker for me.
Also, probably, arguably, Noel's two best guitar solos are in that. I don't think Noel did two guitar solos in anything else, but they're two amazing old guitar solos.
Is that that one?
Yeah, and then when it just drops off, and because he usually just plays the same scale, but then he plays this slightly weird scale for the din 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 din
din din din din din. Yeah, love it. So yeah, so Head Shrinker is my number five. So back to James for your number four.
Right, so this is a bit of a wild card one for me. This is one of my favourite Oasis songs, and it's really underrated, and it's Cloudburst. I love the way that Tony McCarroll comes in on the drums there. Then you've got the kind of howls of feedback, and then this chorus distortion chord that comes in. And I love the, even though they slightly ripped it off the Roses, I love the, you know what? This.
Go on, mate. Go on.
That's fucking awesome.
Wake up, there's a new day, darling. Love it. Do you need a new Liam, mate? I've clearly got the skill. Yeah, love it. Love Cloudburst. It's so special. That drum beat. It is, yeah, it's Standing Here by the Roses, but yeah, great shout. Absolutely love it. Ian, what's your number four, mate?
Turn Up the Sun.
Turn Up the Sun, oh. Yeah.
Which, I think, much like yourself, James, I didn't really buy into the chemistry in a big way. I kind of went... I looked down on the shoulder of the Giants, and I don't know, Hidden Chemistry has got a little bit lost to me. I remember all of the singles coming out and stuff, but then I went to the Etihad to watch Oasis on the Sunday, and had heard bits of the album, and obviously they come out to Turn Up the Sun, and I was just like, what is this? It's absolutely amazing. But it's Zach's drums. They're so... It's the almost double bass element of it, but also then you've got Andy's finger style on it, and maybe it's Noel, maybe it's Andy that's playing the kind of the simple guitar line over the top of it, but it just bangs so hard live. It's a really, really big intro. And obviously then Liam just comes absolutely sneering in and smashing the vocals. So yeah, that's my number four.
It was, once again, it was one I was going to put in my top five, but because I talked about it quite a lot last time. And I think it's interesting, actually, when you look at Andy's songs, they generally do have quite interesting intros. Like when we're saying in the later years, actually, Keep the Dream Alive's got a really lovely intro. Nature of Reality has, you know, they do. He does, what was it? The obviously, Turn Up the Sun, like we're talking about. Like they generally, I think obviously him as a guitar player, and it was his chance, I suppose it was his chance. He's got a song, why he's not just going to waste that opportunity. So he does, his stuff does tend to have interesting bits going on. So yeah, no, I absolutely love it. And the fact it's just that jangly section, it's like, it could almost be a separate little song, like A Quick Peep, you know, is a separate little song. Amazing. Right, yeah. So is that me now for number four? So I'm going to go, it's an obvious one, but I'm going to go Cigarettes and Alcohol. I love the hiss, you know, and that, and as the guitar kicks in, and it was, you know, for me, it just really sums up the ballsiness of the fact that Oasis would just completely rip people off. You know, it's like, yeah, it is T-Rex and we don't care. You know, and not only is it the first bit, you know, that sounds like, oh, it's the T-Rex. And then when it's like, when it actually goes into the next bit as well, you're like, oh no, they've just ripped it wholesale. You know, and it just got such a, you know, just that sound of it. And you can, it feels like, you know, you can hear the studio, can't you? It's you've got that real atmosphere. It's not just clean recording, you know, the tape hiss, and it feels like you're in sort of a dank like recording, like you're in the boardwalk or something, you know what I mean? It's just got that real feel to it. I absolutely love it.
I love the little bits that Owen Morris left in, and at the end, and sort of someone sniggering in the background and all that. It's brilliant.
Yeah, Liam warming up in the beginning of it. I think, like you say, the hiss as well, because it could be a little, I think without that, it might feel a bit too T-Rex, because it fills all the gap out, and it creates the brick wall, doesn't it? That's why it's in there, to just make it all the way across with the riff, but it really fills the space.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the ironic thing about the fact that they nicked it is, several people said this on my channel, and I thought about it and went, that's right. Almost every song Noel Gallagher nicked, he improved.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
Hip-hop philosophy.
Just
took the best bit.
And Bolam has probably nicked it off of the blues, you know, he probably nicked it off of Elmore Leonard or something. Oh, Elmore Leonard? Isn't he an author? Elmore James or someone like that. So, yeah, anyway, all good. Right. Hargreaves, what's your number three, mate?
So I was tempted to kind of just go with all rockers here, but one of the ones that influenced me the most was the Master Plan. So that really gentle acoustic intro, and then bringing in the strings. I was always a sucker for an acoustic guitar plus strings. It always hit me here as a young lad, you know. And that combined with maybe the best lyrics he's ever written. Magic. It's just magic. So Master Plan is my number three.
Yeah. when that just, yeah.
I think that came, I think he hummed that. I think they had it, or he sort of played it on the guitar, because so much of what the orchestra does is Noel licks. It's from Noel's lick library. So I think he sat down with whoever conducted that and either hummed bits or literally played it on the guitar, because it really sounds like Noel has picked up an orchestra and is noodling on it.
Yeah, that's a great shout. It is amazing, isn't it? It's beautiful, that tune.
Take the time to make some sense of what you want to say, and cast your words away upon the waves, and sail them home with acquiesce on a ship of hope today. And as they land upon the shore, tell them not to fear no more. Say it loud and sing it proud today.
The bit where it goes, all we know is that we don't know. That's probably my favourite. No, that's probably my favourite melody. I don't know what it is about that, the way that it sweeps up and then sweeps back down again, back into the chorus. It's just so well done.
Something I realised the other day, I was listening to it, and something I realised, the same with Don't Look Back in Anger, the same with Half the World Away. So Half the World Away, if you listen closely, the guitars are out of tune with the I think it's a Rhodes. Boom, doo, doo, ba, doo, doo. Is that a Fender Rhodes? I think it's a Rhodes. the guitars are a bit out of tune. If you listen to Don't Look Back in Anger, or if you put that vocal line through a digital mapper and watch it, totally out of tune. If you do the same with Master Plan, it's out of tune. But that means, but it's not really out of tune. What it is it's human. It's natural. It sounds like it sort of tricks the brain into feeling like, when you listen to the Master Plan, it tricks the brain to thinking you are sat there being performed to, like this could be in the room next to you, and it's the frigging London Symphony Orchestra or whoever it was, you know, that everyman vibe that Noel somehow managed to get into his songs. What, you know, you were saying earlier about how the newer stuff, it misses some stuff that it had in the 90s. I think autotune is a massive culprit of that, because Don't Look Back in Anger, he's all over the place, but it sounds amazing. It's not locked in a surgical way, and it sounds amazing.
Are we on to Ian's number three?
Yeah, so Bring It On Down.
Oh,
because it's a pretty wild drum take that's laid down, and again the sound that they get as well. I mean, where was that recorded? Because that wasn't part of the Sawmill sessions, was it?
No, that was a separate one, wasn't it? When with the real people, I think, wasn't it? Because they were going to bring in that other guy.
I think they brought in the session drummer, didn't they? And he couldn't get it, and Tony went in and put it down. But I can't remember where it was done. Immense drumming. Again, there's about 5 seconds of just sort of sound at the beginning of it as well. It's like, and again, it's like what's happening? What's this? What is this? And then. You know, the drums come in and they're just, you know, it's an epic drum track.
Yeah, definitely another one that could have easily gone into mine. And one of the points I made on the last episode is I think that and Columbia feel more like they come from sort of jam sessions You know, it's not that it's like, you know, these songs where Noel's crafted it, you know, by himself. They because they are the longest two on Definitely Maybe by quite a way. And it feels to me like that was a jam session that came together into a song rather than Noel saying, I'm going to do this, now you do this, now you do this. But yeah, I love it.
Well, it's a really satisfying, and I find this quite a lot, especially with the Definitely Maybe stuff, but it's a really satisfying chord sequence to jam over. So it's just a B minor pentatonic. But that, and when I did the breakdown on Bring It On Down, I don't think that 2005 version is all right. I don't think Zach ever really drummed it in the same, you know, quite as well as Tony did. But it lost its it lost a bit of its definition when they played it with a cap over me. And when they go B, D, G, and then down to the lower E, it just fits a really fun track to kind of play guitar and noodle away over the top of. So you can see how they, I mean, because there's probably more guitar leads on it than there is actually Liam singing.
Cool. My number three, I'm going for an acoustic tune. I'm going for Talk Tonight. Oh. And one of the reasons why is I love the Just Take My Watch Off and the fact he coughs. Like, once again, James, like you're saying, it's real. It's true. We're in the studio with him. You know, this isn't a crafted piece of magic. This is truly a man and a guitar and not much else, you know, a bit of tambourine or whatever going on. And also it's got special memory for me because, speaking about tuning guitars, that was how I used to tune my guitar, was I'd play like the dong of the E that plays it. And I would then use that as my E when I was tuning it. So if that is out of tune, then my guitars have been out of tune forever, because that's how I always used to get the E to tune my guitar on.
Just take me watch off.
And, you know, it was such a, you know, just a lovely chord sequence to play through. I love all, it builds as well. You don't think of it, but actually if you listen to it, you know, hand claps come in at a certain point, and it's not just the acoustic, there's the other instrumentation going on.
Sitting on my own, chewing on a bone, 1,000,000,000 miles from home, when something hit me somewhere right between the eyes.
And then obviously it goes into you know, into some of Noel's most personal lyrics. Which is another one that you did an excellent investigative deep dive, James, on one of your videos.
Yeah, do you know what I really love about that song though? It's exactly the same thing. It's the human element of the song. So when he did his backing vocals, he goes, "Where you played when you were young," they're out of sync, and he leaves them in, and it's cool. I love that there's one hand clap. There's no gang hand claps. He's recorded one, just one. It's got such a natural... You could be sat round the campfire, you know? And that's why it speaks to us. That's why we connect with it. That's how humans have listened to music for thousands of years. Just sat down like that, loose, free, round the campfire style almost. And that's why it speaks to us. That's a huge part of it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I love it. Yeah, beautiful tune. Cool. All right. So then, James, back to you with your number two.
Okay. So I'm going to go Champagne Supernova for this one, but I'm going to say this intro starts with the outro of Morning Glory. So it's fading out, helicopters, then you've got sloshing water, then you've got a distant harmonica from the Swamp Song going on for, what, 40-odd seconds or something. And the water carries on, and then you've got he's playing lead on a humbucking guitar of some description, I'm pretty sure, on the rhythm pickup, which means it's got no bite at all. It doesn't cut. It's really soft. It's really mellow, and almost all of his clean lead on that song. I haven't got facts. This is all just ear, but I'm pretty sure all the lead, the clean lead on that song, is humbucking guitar on the neck pickup. So it's really, really mellow. And then it just gradually builds up, the waves fade out, and that mad transition from the end of the rockiest song on the album to the softest intro, I think that was just a mad piece of genius on, I don't know if it was Morris or Noel or both. That little transition there, end of Morning Glory to start of, I just hit my microphone. From end of Morning Glory to start of Champagne Supernova is something else for me. Someday you will find me caught beneath the landslide in a champagne supernova in the sky. Someday you will find me caught beneath the landslide in a champagne supernova. A champagne supernova in the sky.
Yeah. What do you think, Ian, in playing it? Is it a fun one to play, and is it difficult to get the band to get that right?
So we play the waves and the accordion. We've got our keys player, Steve, has it all on synth, so we play that. And then we jam around over the top of it with acoustic guitar. Our singer plays the guitar, and then Gary, our second guitarist, will play the leads, and I'll play the arpeggio. So it kind of all mellows out. We try and get that vibe. I mean, and I think you make a really good point. You go from the madness and the rock of Morning Glory in Champagne Supernova. I think that there's, I know it's been touched on before, but what Oasis did and what made them so enormously popular was they pulled all of these different countercultures together. And I think that there's a real symbolism in that, that if Morning Glory into Champagne Supernova, because Champagne Supernova for me essentially is a come down track. And you can tell the Hacienda influence, the Morning Glory, all the cocaine references, all of the, it is a late night, last night out anthem. And you go into Champagne Supernova, and that's like that's the 6 o'clock in the morning, guys. Da, 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 da. And then when it picks back up, it's the surreal conversations that you're having. The world's still spinning around. Why? And that is, and for me, that's where you get like the Chemical Brothers and Prodigy, and it's all sort of that circle is completed. That's why they're all involved in it, and that's why. Oasis appealed to rave culture, and it's summed up really well in those two tracks and the way that flows into it.
I love that. That's a great shout. I've never even thought of it like that literally, but yeah, you've had the crazy night with Morning Glory, then like the walk home, and then so as you know, like you still got the tune playing in your head, and that's like the Swamp Song. You're still remembering the tune from earlier in the night, and hence that sort of fades in and fades out again. And then you got the surreal conversations when you're all back to theirs and hungover and still a bit pissed. That's brilliant, mate. Oh, I'm getting shivers. It's a real now.
It's a real. I'm not endorsing the kids, but it is a real, rave culture ecstasy song for me, because it's got that drop off the waves, and then when it picks up, someday you will find, and then it's the middle section and the chorus is absolutely massive, and the guitar solo, and then even when it plays out and Bonehead plays, well, I'm not sure, James, if you worked out whether it was an accordion or whether it was the mouth flute that Bonehead actually plays.
I'll tell you in a sec.
But even that's like, do you know what I mean? It's like, oh God, I'm coming down again. It's like, it's even got that feel to it at the end, and then it like slides away and just kind of decays a little bit. And so that's what I always think about.
Well, that mystery has been solved now. So there's a guy called Craig Lockwood, I think, who started a new podcast. He's only done one episode, which was on. It's called Album Sleeve Notes, I think. Yeah, Album Sleeve Notes, and he interviewed Nick Bryan. And following my video where I was saying, you know, is Bonehead a secret didgeridoo master? Because this goes non-stop from the start to the end. He asked Nick Bryan what it was, and it's a loop. It's a loop that contains Mellotron, Ebow, what do you call the melodica? And there was something else. It's basically this huge mishmash of things. I think it might have been two Ebow tracks, two Mellotrons, and one melodica, or something like that. So there is melodica in it after all, but it's just a loop. And they just literally just ran it start to finish of the song with a do 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 do. Do, 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 do. Round and round and round and round. So, no didgeridoo master, unfortunately.
And then it's got one of those that sound I was talking about. Is it almost like one of those whistles at the end?
The boo, 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 boo.
Yeah,
boo.
It's got like a little whistle, yeah. Whistly bit.
We never established what that was. Someone said it's Paul Weller using a slide going deo, deo, deo.
Oh,
we
right.
Never really established what it was.
That makes sense. All right, well, when I get Noel on the podcast, I'll ask him. Well, you've got more chance of getting him on your YouTube channel, to be honest, mate. good. All right, so now we're on to Ian's number two?
Yeah, so... So my number two is Morning Glory, because probably quite personal to me, but I think obviously it's just recognisable, and it's got the, you know, it's quite pertinent at the minute with Charlie Watts passing on, but it's got that Street Fighting Man sort of floor tom and snare and bass drum sort of going on as well. But when I was a bit of a late comer but it was basically I had Jollification by Lightning Seeds, and I absolutely loved that, and I was a massive Madness fan when I was a kid as well. I got got a bit of a mixed musical heritage up to my teens, but I got given an hour price £10 voucher for Christmas 1995, and couldn't buy any computer games with it because PS1 games were £45. So I had to go and decide what to buy. So I went and bought Morning Glory because somebody at school had told me it was really good, and because they were singing Don't Look Back in Anger on the bus. And I listened to Wonderwall and Don't Look Back in Anger and perhaps Roll With It for about 6 weeks, just the three songs. And I said to this kid who was the cool kid at school, I was like, oh, yeah, I really love that album. Man, it's really good. I really like Roll With It and Wonderwall, Don't Look Back in Anger. It's really great. He's like, what about the rest of the album? Like, you listen to anything else? And I was like, yeah, you know, not really. And he was like, go home and like listen to Morning Glory, the song. I was like, okay. So I got in from school and it was like 4 o'clock. My mum and dad were out, and I had a PlayStation and a portable telly as my CD player. So I put the CD player in and I was like, right, put it on track 10. And the PS1, if you played a track and then you repeated it and you played it again, it counted up. So it would go like 1, 2, 3 if you repeated the track. And I listened to Morning Glory 26 times in a row. And I could still remember it. And that was Like, I'm sure we've all got stories like this, but that was like the seismic life-changing moment where I became an Oasis fan. And I went in the next day and I was like, oh my God. And yeah, so there you go. I listened to Morning Glory pretty much relentlessly for 2 hours through a portable TV. But it was just one of the best. Just the intro in particular was just like the best thing I'd ever heard. So little 14-year-old me, if I was ever little, was hooked at that point.
There's certain songs, isn't there, that you just think you can't just listen to it once. You kind of have to go back and stick it on again. You know what I mean?
What, like, is it that I've got that ability. I could listen. I could put whatever on easy, like 5 or 6 times in a row, and not get bored of it.
No.
Or anything Supersonic, you know, whatever it is, and not really get that fed up of listening to it. And then there's other stuff which I really love, but I couldn't listen to it, you know, twice in a row.
No, absolutely. Oh, magic. That's a great story, mate. I love that. I've never heard that before. That was cool. All right, so I think it's my number 2, and it was mentioned earlier, it's Slide Away. Now, I know it's obvious, and I did think about putting something else in, but you know, it's perfect. I mean, we used to cover it when I was in the band as well. So it was it has got a special memory for me because of that. But, you know, like you're saying, that tune is at the start, and it's just, and then you get that guitar, and then the like hum, and then, and it all kicks in. It's just so, it's something so different and so special. It's kind of, it's indie music, but, and it's rock music, but it's something else. It's otherworldly. I can't put my finger on it. I think more so than, you know, the Live Forever, or more so than anything else on that album. There's, and maybe it's because it was an outtake from the previous session, you know, with a different producer or whatever, but there's just something about it that's just, I wish I could understand why it works so well, but it just gives me chills, and it's just perfection in music, I think.
There's some songs where you can't really quantify why the magic's there, but it is. I mean, for me, if someone said, what is the best Oasis song, it's just Slide Away. You know, that's my immediate reaction is Slide Away. The most popular is like, you know, Wonderwall and Don't Look Back in Anger. And Don't Look Back in Anger sometimes edges out Slide Away for me, but Slide Away is up there. It's got, he wrote it, and he said that the song landed fully formed, didn't he? It was during the Mono Valley sessions. He basically just, he was like, oh, song, and wrote it, and there it was. And I think a lot of his very best songs landed that way. Supersonic landed that way, didn't it? And yeah, so sometimes you can craft a song for years, and you come out and go, yeah, that's good. And then other times you just get a bolt of lightning to the head, and you're scrambling for pen and paper, and then you just write the best thing that's ever been written in your life, you know?
And it's interesting because, like, you know, like Don't Go Away is effectively the same as Slide Away, like in the intro. I think they're very, very close, but you can just feel it in the recording, you know? And think about this, like, it's just guitars, isn't it? It's just someone hitting a guitar, and that music, that those notes, strings vibrating, that's all it is. Yeah, and I love Don't Go Away, but I'm just saying this is the, just in the difference in sound, it's just so different. There's just something, the tone, I can't get my head around it.
The guitar in Spiderway really seems to chime, whereas with the rest of the album, it's distorted without necessarily a lot of clarity. But in Spiderway, obviously Bonehead's doing his thing and he kind of fizzes along, but Noel's just seems to really chime through. And I don't know if that's because he's using Johnny Marr's Les Paul or not in it. And the rest of it's on an Epiphone Les Paul, but it just—I think that definitely seems to make a difference.
Sure, love it. Anyway, however he's doing it, it's magic, and you know, I just want to like live in that. Just put that in a snow globe and just live in it. You know what I mean? Anyway, whatever. It's gibberish. James, what's your number one, mate?
My number one is. I can find the flipping thing right. My number one is the live version of Fading Out at the G-Mex Manchester on the 14th of December, 1997.
All right, hipster.
It is shit hot. It's if they repackaged Be Here Now and made Fading Out the first track and they used that version, you know, it's absolutely some of Noel's best guitar work from that era. It's like a 4 minute absolutely bouncing guitar solo.
Is that the one where he's just on the he's just on the space deck and he's like, he's just revving it right up.
There's a couple of different versions of it.
But there's
one anyway. There's one on. There's a couple of versions of this on YouTube though, and it is astounding. This is Oasis at their absolute peak of popularity at the end of the tour, so at their peak live, and it's a version you don't have a studio version of. It is completely unique, and I've never heard Noel do live guitar work like he does on that. So for me, that live version of Fading Out, okay, hipster, whatever, but but that for me, that's it. If they don't put that out, you know, if they don't get them tracks, get someone to mix and master it properly and put that out, Oasis fans are being robbed.
Love it. Love it. I know you, Ian, I know when you played with us up in Glasgow, you specifically do live versions, don't you? So it's like, you know, you did like the specific Wembley Gas Panic, I think, and things like that. So is the... Be Here Now, Fading Out. Is that somewhere near the live set? Can we expect to hear that?
Well, I think the thing is, when you're playing, when you're not necessarily playing to a room full of Oasis fans, the Fading Out might be a place for everybody to fade in at the bar. But it's what used to happen when we played Gas Panic. We'd be having an amazing time on stage. But there'll be a few hardcore at the front. But yeah, I mean, the first time I saw Oasis was at Earl's Court on the B&L tour, and there's four videos of the night I was there that are on YouTube. There's Magic Pie, B&L, Fading Out. There's maybe one more, and it is just, I've got to agree with James. It's absolutely amazing. I've not got it on my list. I've got Fading Out on my list, but I was thinking more of the album version. But as a whole piece, it's as kind of prog as Oasis got, without a doubt. I think, was it the first track of the encore as well? I mean, quite a stomper to come back on with.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, yeah.
My favourite version has the guy from Corner Shop playing the tabla on it as well when they did it in America. Yeah. That's more hipster. All right, Ian, what's your number one?
I'm going to go a bit hipster as well. So Acquiesce, but live. And I mean, the Main Road version is probably the most famous version, but for me, it's the Earl's Court version that's on the Born in Glory reissue. There's something about, like, Whitey gets a bit of stick, and with some of the work that I've been doing on the videos, I know why he gets stick, especially from Noel, because you can't run a click through him, he's all over the place. But when he plays the intro, it's the same at Main Road, and it must be. Something that he does intentionally, but he just lets the drum fill drag a little bit, and it just makes it a little bit offbeat. And say something like "Familiar to Millions," where it may even be playing the click, or it's just trying to keep it a bit tighter. I think it loses the feel. But on the 95, 96 versions of Acquiesce, it's slightly slower. The guitars are heavier, especially on 95 Earl's Court. There's something otherworldly about with Oasis and Earl's Court sonically. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just the cavernous room, or the fact that they were just ramped up amp-wise. Did you listen to the interview with Mark Hoyle when he's on about, what the podcast was now, but he was talking about how when they started to get into taking them into bigger venues, they basically had two systems. They put a system in the back, as well as a system on the stage, and that was creating a flux of sound in the middle, if you want. It was creating an intensity. And I don't know if they were doing that at Earl's Court in 95, but there's definitely a level of intensity there, and a chorus and a reverb going on, which I think is natural, but also probably embellished on as well. But basically it comes down to Whitey's drumming and the way that he holds the band back and then lets them go. He plays a drum pattern which is, I don't know how to describe it, but on the verse he'll go, he'll change his bass drum, and it just makes the whole thing like sort of breakbeaty, a bit sort of an acoustic sort of Chemical Brothers-y hip hoppy kind of feel to it.
I got you.
So that's what I'm going with. I think the intro of Earl's Court is just 16 bars of pure Oasis greatness for a live performance.
I agree about drums not being played to a click.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't tell you the difference, to be honest, in the, you know, in the Earl's Court versus the main road, but you know, that period, you know, and the main road one jumps out because obviously it's all the memories of watching the There and Then video and everything, but you know, there is something just so special about that with the crowds and with the message and everything. And it's beautiful that Liam's still doing that song now. And you know, and actually I think that the band are getting it together now. You know, they're sounding a lot better, Liam's band now, and that it won't ever be as great as how Oasis played it, but it's getting there. It's getting better, man. All right, so my number one is My Big Mouth. I love My Big Mouth. I think it's the I mean, because I love Be Here Now. So Be Here Now is probably the album, I don't think it's the best album, but it's the one that I have the most love for. And Do You Know What I Mean is the single. And so it's like, okay, thank you. We've heard that one. Love it. Great. Right. Now it's time for the album. And this, as those guitars come in, it's like, Jesus, what is this? And there must be like 500 guitars. The drums are thunderous. And then it just goes into that massive riff. And it's just, I mean, I don't know. Once again, it's like the Slideaway thing. How do you do that? How do you create this noise? You know, and then obviously then when you get into the verse, he says it is a sound so very loud that no one can hear, which is just absolutely perfect because it's just summarized what he's just done in musically. But I love that tune and that intro, just the way it, you know, that sort of first bit of feedback, and it's got, I think, this tambourine going or something. It's just like grabs you. And yeah, we talked about like an Oasis song just grabbing you off the radio with something. Nothing grabs you like that crunch start of My Big Mouth, and not just the start, but then as it descends and then goes into the main big section. Oh, it's just the best. It's just the best music ever made. That's all there is to it.
Honorable shout out as well for the 2009 version of that, which is, again, that's so, there's a version that's from the they did a gig at the Eden Project, didn't they, which is just taken from the board. It's a really clear, loud, like bootleg, and that's a great version as well.
I always thought that song was that was always my favourite track off Be Here Now, and I always thought that that was what Morning Glory was on Morning Glory. That was that pushed to the most extreme it could possibly be pushed, and so if you look at the waveform, it's just a block from start to finish of just relentless fucking wall of noise. And but that riff, the I don't know if he nicked it, but I don't think he did. I think that's a Noel original. I think it's one of his best riffs, and I actually agree. That was my number six. So I had seven, and Big Mouth was six. Yeah,
I love it. I love it. Any other honourable mentions for you chaps?
Supersonic.
You can't argue with that, can you?
I can't remember who on the podcast had mentioned this, and it really got me thinking. It might have even been you, James, actually, that mentioned it, but going from Angel Child into Heroes with Snare, yeah. That is actually, like, that's really, really clever, and I really think that's a really good intro. We're talking about intros and segues in the song, just to do the kind of, the song might say, like, straight in on the beat. That's really good.
Yeah. And it's in the same key, isn't it? Because it's like, tear the mind... Yeah. It's perfect.
Really, really, yeah, it's really cool.
I stand by my statement that Heroes, that version's better than Bowie's.
No. It's the verse. I could give you it in the music, but no, it's just that Noel doesn't sing it.
It gets a bit filled with Noel, doesn't it? I think Flashback is a little bit like that as well. Like, it could be whistling outside the chip shop.
I love
that.
Sacrilege
me saying that, but
I love. There's a couple of more acoustic-y ones that I really love. Rocking Chair, the way it just fades in, you know, the fact that it's like it just fades in, you know, into this lovely do 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 with that beautiful guitar.
Was there any reason ever given for that?
Sorry,
was there ever any reason given for that fading? I've always been curious about that.
No, I don't know. It's just, I just love it. And the fact it fades out as well, I just think it's part of the wistful kind of the time passing idea of the song. I'd always just put it down to, but I just love it so much. And then the other one that's very acoustic-y as well, that I love, is It's Better People. Just that, you know, it's the, you get the, like, the count in and just like, it's so different, you know, it's different. It's different to anything else that they've done. And a later one as well that has a similar feel is Part of the Queue, you know, but that, I mean, is very close to the Stranglers tune, so it sort of, you kind of loses points for that, but once again, it's like, you know, and then obviously other ones I talked about on the podcast, like the Importance of Being Idle, dun 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 dun, 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 dun. I mean, what the hell is that, you know? It's so cinematic and dramatic, and it's just different, isn't it? It's like, it's not just we're playing through the chord sequence. This is like something extra that Noel's come up with. Love it.
I'm surprised you've not mentioned Round Our Way, because that's got an amazing intro.
Yeah, I talk about it too much, to be honest, so I kind of left it off.
And Columbia Live at Nebworth as well has got a lovely intro into it. Now it just starts with that sort of A major. Just kind of comes in and brings everything along with it. Really, that's got a really cool intro to it.
Yeah.
I know the one thing that if you do it in a pub, that the second you do this, the second you go... The whole pub stops and goes, hey! Yeah.
What about, I thought you were going to do the opening chords to Roll With It. That bang, bang, bang,
oh,
bang,
yeah.
Bang.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one that, you know, even when you've got, you know, pub, you know, Roll With It, I don't think is anyone's favourite Oasis song. But when you hear an Oasis tribute band and that, down, 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 you can't help but just go like, hey, you know, it's just such a beautiful, joyous moment.
It was the soundtrack to that year.
Yeah.
She's Electric got a lovely little F sharp, like into it as well.
Yeah. Well,
really well thought out. Yeah.
The only other one I would mention that was my number 7 was Fucking in the Bushes.
But is it an intro though? Because the whole thing's an intro.
I remember when I put that on for the first time. We put this festival on, you bastards! I thought that was amazing.
Oh yeah, I love
and
it.
Didn't Liam just walk onto that at Reading, or was that another gig?
Yeah, no, he's been using it for a couple of years, I think he's been using it ever since he's come back. But what I love is the way that as he comes on stage, like the camera follows him, like a boxer's intro. And I mentioned it on the last episode, but you know, Bono used to do that, but he actually would wear boxing gloves, and it was a bit, you know, and the robe and everything is a bit on the nose, whereas Liam, because he's such a star, and you know, when you're ready for him to be on stage and you can see him, you know and he's there, he's fist bumping all the people, all the security and stuff, because he's the man of the people, and then there he is, you know, and you've got the up in the bushes. It's such a great choice to come onto that, isn't it? Love it. Good. All right. Well, look, gentlemen, thank you so much for your time this evening. It's been greatly appreciated. I hope people have enjoyed listening to our ramblings on Oasis intros. And I'm very excited to see you all on the 11th of December at FAC 251 in Manchester. The link for tickets is in the description of this episode, or it should be. So you can go on there right now and buy them, and it would be lovely to see everyone up there. Ian, where can the kids find you online? And do you want to tell us about Oasis Supernova?
Yeah, so coming to a stage near you in 2022. you'll find us on facebook.com/theoasissupernova or oasissupernova.co.uk. Or we're on Instagram as well. I think just generally the Oasis Supernova, because someone's already got Oasis Supernova. But yeah, you'll find us, and hopefully we'll see everybody at FAC. I don't know, is it FAC? Is it FAC 251 or is it FAC 251? It's basically the factory offices that they turn into a club.
Yeah, love it. And James, where can the kids find you online?
Just put James Hargreaves into YouTube. That's it. Or you can find me on Twitter as well, with a much smaller
you
follower. You are?
You flash bastard. YouTube, you're
fine. I've worked hard for that.
Yeah. And what have you got? Any interesting videos coming up that we should be looking out for?
Well, I'm working on a bit of a retrospective on Jarvis Cocker versus Michael Jackson at the moment. Because that was a real central thing of the 90s. I've got a few things in the works. There's a very long list of examples of exactly the song that Noel sampled or nicked, however you want to say it, and then his song and how they sit next to each other. There's a few bits and bobs in the works, as well as a rundown of the story of Gwigsy.
Very exciting. Cool. All right, well, we'll look forward to that. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time this evening, and stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.
It's James here on Saturday afternoon. I was just about to press upload on the podcast, and then Liam just tweeted that he fell out of a helicopter. So appears to be all right. He's tweeted, so check this out. I fell out the helicopter last night. You couldn't write it. All good. Who said rock and roll is dead? Keith Moon, eat your drum skin out. Come on, you know, LG. And yeah, he's sent a picture of his face, looking a bit battered and bruised. So, yeah, by looks of it, he's okay. Yeah, quite bizarre. I actually had a heads up from someone saying about 8 o'clock this morning, saying I heard Liam's fell out of a helicopter. But then he tweeted a couple of times this morning, so I thought, well, that can't be true. But yeah, it was true. Liam fell out of a helicopter, but he looked all right, so he can't have fallen from that far. But anyway, we shall wait to hear further information. Anyway, on that bombshell, I'll just say thank you very much for listening to the Oasis podcast. Most of all, thanks go to our patrons. You can become a patron at patreon.com/oasispod. And as I said earlier, I'm just putting together free gifts, the next round of free gifts. The last time was just before Christmas last year, when we sent out badges to everyone, and a few other bits and pieces as well to the people that have been really good supporters. And I'm going to be doing the same. I've got some very special items to go out. I'm happy to send international as well. So those of you that are in the US and other places, that's fine. Yeah, so if you're not a patron already and you would like to qualify for that, then sign up very quick at $3 or $5. because yeah, and don't be cheeky and sign up and then get the thing and then cancel, because that wouldn't be very nice, would it? But anyway, yes, happy to do that. Plus, as I said, we've got the live event coming 2nd of October, me and McGee at the Savoy Theatre in Monmouth, talking What's the Story Morning Glory. And then the big one, 11th of December, myself and the two guests that were on today, Ian Armstrong with his band Oasis Supernova, James Hargreaves with his live band, and all kinds of other exciting stuff happening. You know, when we do Oasis podcast nights, it's amazing. So if you're in the UK, especially in the Northwest, and can get up there, then do please do so. As I said, if you're a patron, you can come in for free. If you are not a patron, then do hit the link in the description and use the code SUPERNOVA and you'll get £3 off. As always, please email me, oasispod@gmail.com, if you have any questions or you would like to get in touch. Do follow on social media, Oasis Pod on Instagram and Oasis Podcast on Facebook and Twitter. And please do reviews on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. That's really helpful and good. And yeah, don't go falling out of helicopters. Stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.
Practically what Noel was using, and it was absolutely amazing for like for a cheap amp. But I've moved to tubes now, so
have you? Yeah, I mean, honestly, with tube amps, they just piss me off because they sound different everywhere you go. They sound different based on the volume. They sound different based on the temperature of the room, the heat of the valve, the age of the valve, and it just pisses me off. You know, when you spend ages crafting your tone and getting it right, and the motherfucker sounds different as soon as you go to a different room, it just makes me so mad.
All right, guitar nerds, thanks. You know, I always knew, you know, when people debated for years, did Liam say, doesn't matter if it's out of tune or doesn't matter if it's our tune? And some people thought it was our tune because it's a cover. I knew it was out of tune because I spent years as the singer looking at guitar players. Oh, no, it's not 100% perfectly in tune. Hold on. And for fuck's sake, can we just get on with it? You know, like 20 minutes later. Hold on. No, I've got to get this guitar effect absolutely perfect. And I'm like, Christ, I could still be like in bed now. You know, can you guys just play the song? It doesn't matter if it's attitude. So anyway, there you go. Singer rant over. Right.